Delta variant thing. It's fascinating because here we are, August 4th, 1 month away from the start of college football season. It's exciting to think about 107,000 fans being inside Beaver Stadium for Penn State football games this fall, especially after what we saw last year, which was just really eerie. I guess the best word I can think about an empty football stadium is, was eerie. And it would be exciting to have 107,000 back in there. But I don't know if that's going to be the case. Right now, if I had to guess, I would say that at some point this season, there will not 107,000 fans would not be allowed in Beaver Stadium at some point because of these continuing COVID situations. I just wonder if we're going to have to get back to some mandates and things like that. So anyway, I'll tell you what. I'll bring in Neil Riddell from the Altoona Mirror. And when I called Neil a couple minutes ago, I'll let you tell the story because it's a great little 5 second story. What was it that you told me?
Well, Corey, your number popped up here, and it brought back memories of the Monday evening quarterback that I did on WRTA. Joe Shuda was part of that. It was 1980. And same number, 9460435.
I love it because, one, it says that you're old. But two, it says that a lot of times things in life don't change. A lot of things, this is a professional radio segue here, folks. A lot of things don't change, but a lot of things do change. You've covered college football for this entire time going back to that point. Let me ask you this, and we'll kind of piece it together as we go along. Do you recognize college football today, Neil, or are we getting really close to a situation where you may not recognize it?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's more than recognizing it. It's challenging maybe the older people and my willingness to accept it and to accept the change that's coming with it. I do agree that it's not right where the coaches are making $7, $8, and $9 million and the players aren't making anything. But then I also look and I see, okay, the quarterback's announcing deals and a backup running back has a hamburger deal in Bellefonte. And I just wonder about the inevitable divide that can accompany some of this. And I think, and I also wonder, you know, Joe Fan has always been, well, they feel bad for the kid that misses the game-tying extra point with 3 seconds to go, or the kid that, or Deshaun Hamilton that drops the pass that would have beat Pitt and maybe put Penn State in the playoff. You always feel bad because you say, well, you know, these are kids and we don't think they're getting paid and whatnot. But, you know, I wonder if some of that attitude will change a little bit also, a little less tolerance because you see the quarterback from Alabama apparently is going to make $1 million before it takes a snap. And you don't want to come off as like, you know, the bitter old guy. I really don't.
Right.
Because I still love the game. I'm looking forward to football season. But no question, a lot of things are changing. The transfer portal, I don't know that the transfer portal is a good message just because there's the slightest hint of trouble and a kid's going to bail. Some of the basketball players transferred twice, for God's sake. So it's harder to get used to. I would say that, yeah.
Neil Riddell from the Altoona Mirror, and those are all really good points. I want to go to the quarterback thing. The Alabama quarterback who has never started a game reportedly has at least $800,000 in name, image, likeness deals, maybe over $1 million. And you brought up a really interesting point. But look, when the guys get to the pros and they're making millions of dollars, they're kind of considered fair game for fans, for media, for everybody. If you're making mistakes, you know, you're going to be held accountable even to a higher degree. We've generally given, the way it works is you give the benefit of the doubt all the time to a youth athlete, mm-hmm. junior high, even high school. Once you get to college, hey, look, Penn State's a $500 million football program. They'll open themselves up to criticism a little bit more, but it's still amateur athletes. If Sean Clifford is going out making a lot of money and Sean Clifford throws 3 interceptions to lose a game, are we now looking at him differently because in our minds we might consider him, whether it's, you know, technically accurate or not, we might consider him more of a professional player?
You know, I think so. I think people are going to be a little less tolerant. Whether that means they're going to turn on individual players and start booing. Corey, remember like the first year of the curve we got into this?
Yep, sure.
There was booing of a kid who couldn't throw a strike. And I thought at that point, hey, it's developmental. I mean, a kid's trying to throw a strike. He'd thrown eight consecutive balls or whatever, but there was booing. And we hadn't seen that.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it is professional sports, but I kind of think Penn State's football is more professional than the curve in
sure.
some ways.
Absolutely, yeah.
I do wonder, and some of that might be how these players comport themselves in having the opportunity to make be able to go out and take the offensive lineman out for some pizza. In fact, we've been reading about this stuff with these guys take the lineman out for pizza for years. I wondered who foots that bill. I mean, that's gonna be $150. Is the quarterback, is he on the hook for that up until now?
That's great. Those linemen, they can eat. They're all eating a pizza themselves. All right, so again, we're talking about the changes in college athletics. Will we recognize this? Excuse me, the SEC adding Oklahoma and Texas. You know, if the Big Ten's best possibilities are Iowa State, Kansas, TCU, should the Big Ten just go ahead and stand pat and not add anybody, Neil?
I wouldn't rush out to oversaturate with Iowa State, Kansas State, and TCU. I wouldn't. I'd let the smoke clear a little bit, maybe see if you can get Notre Dame, maybe tap into the ACC if you think there's a plum there that could add to your value. The Big Ten has a lot of real name schools. Some of the name schools haven't performed up to their names, to be honest. You know, at times Penn State these last few years, at least with what the expectations are. Certainly Nebraska hasn't. Michigan hasn't lately. They need some of the schools to start playing to what who was it? Dennis Green, to who we all thought they were.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I think the Big East didn't hurt themselves by oversaturating at one point and overreacting to all the changes, and then they had to scale back, and they've been through a cycle. Well, now it's basketball, but I think if they could add Notre Dame, I think that would be some value. It would keep a, kind of a Midwestern. Maybe if you wanted to go outside the box and tap into the Pac-12, if they were interested, to try to bring Oregon, maybe, and another one, and maybe USC, who knows?
Could you see, I mean, if you think about the changes, could you imagine a Big Ten, and this would be for football, a Big Ten football conference having USC and Stanford and Penn State having to go out to Palo Alto every 2 or 3 years or out to LA? I mean, look, it'd be great games. I think we'd all enjoy seeing the games, but is that in any way good for these college athletes and educational institutions?
Well, I mean, I think that's probably a separate discussion of like the educational institution, because I think, let's face it, I mean, I think sports is on such the top of the priority list. You know, to me, that the Big Ten could add those teams, a couple that they could sell the West Coast. All of a sudden, it opens up recruiting pipelines to the West Coast that maybe you didn't have before. A kid from California, would see some people from Big Ten, you'd be able to recruit that way. I just don't want to see just massive change, real instantaneous, just because you're reacting to what somebody else is doing. I just think I would try to take a wait-and-see attitude if they can afford to do that. Now, the other thing, Corey, is, What if the SEC decides, hey, let's put a 32-team league together and be a mini NFL? And what happens to the second tier of all these leagues?
Penn State would be in. Again, this comes down to how does it impact me? And if that's the case, Penn State's in that league, right? They're in the 32.
You would sure hope.
Right, because
but some of that may boil down to some relationships, and you don't know.
Yeah, but Penn State can seat 100,000 people. They have a huge national. The Penn State would be in much better position than Kansas, because they bring nothing for football, or
about
Iowa
Pitt?
State. Yeah, Pitt, still. I mean, Pitt, Penn State's going to have as good or better of a TV draw than Pitt. But the point is, no matter what happens through all of this, I just assume Penn State's going to be okay. Can we make that assumption that Penn State, no matter what, is going, they're not going to be left holding a bag somewhere, right, like a UConn or a Kansas, right, or something like that?
You would think so.
Yeah. All right. One last thing for you, Neil Wardell. I'm going to write something about this in the next couple days, probably about James Franklin. Penn State has the number one recruiting class in the country right now. James Franklin has been to a Fiesta Bowl, a Cotton Bowl, a Rose Bowl. He has certainly been very successful at Penn State. No one out there can question if James Franklin has been successful at Penn State. If you want to have that question, you're just wrong. But when you bring up, when somebody brings up the possibility of Penn State reaching the next goal, reaching the next level, the elite level, getting to a playoff, winning a national title, I hear and read and see people come back at me with, well, James Franklin will never accomplish that. So there's still a question out there for a lot of Penn State fans, and maybe these are haters too, but I still think a lot of Penn State fans would say James Franklin's not necessarily a great game day coach. James Franklin tightens up against, you know, competition in some key games, winning on the road against
Franklin lost the Indiana game.
Correct. Yeah, correct. Absolutely. With the whole scoring the touchdown deal. So when I ask you, when we look at James Franklin and the job that he's done versus getting to the next level, how do we discuss that dynamic?
Right. Well, let's start with the fact that who opened the discussion? James Franklin. And he did it in a calculated way after they got beat by Ohio State, with the elite rant, which he may never be able to match to achieve that. Let's put it that way. And he was the guy that brought it up. Now, I think if they can go to a 12-team playoff, it would give not only Penn State, but a whole lot of other schools that are on that verge of, say, between 5 and 15 over the body of work, to be able to crack that upper echelon, to be able to crack the real elite. And so the margin for error is so difficult. He has not been able to get to the top four. I'd kind of like to see if there was a little bit more of a more inclusion, and to see what he could do in types of first or second round playoff game, get into a quarterfinal game.
That's a great point. How would he do? I mean, we saw USC, Penn State. That was a great college football game. You had maybe one of the greatest runs in the history of college football by Saquon, and Trace is throwing. So we've seen something like that, but your point is an interesting one. With all on the line in a playoff, what kind of coach would James Franklin be against, you know, a Dabo Sweeney or a Nick Saban or whatever in that type of setting?
Right. Now, we've not seen evidence that really in some of the take the handful of clutch moments. And what are the big games? Sometimes the big games turn out to the ones you lose because of certain decisions, handing the ball off, taking the ball out of McSorley's hands against Ohio State, not kneeling on the ball at Indiana. I mean, just some of the little situational sequences that have come up. Now, hey, you know, I agree with where you started. He's been very, very successful, and some coaches are better between January and September than they are from September through December. I think James still has to reach that. He certainly is really drumming up a lot of enthusiasm. Hopefully, we're moving past COVID, which really affected them probably more than every program or as badly as any program. Let's see if they can put that behind us, although, you know, there's a lot of warning signs here that you don't know.
Great discussion. Appreciate the time, man. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Hey, thanks, Corey.
All right, good stuff there. Neil Wardell from the Altoona Mirror.